I'll add my welcome to those that have gone before. We're continuing in the sermon series we began last week called What's Love Got to Do with It? And I'll start with the same two questions I start with last week. Who remembers the song? Hands up. Who would like to sing the song? Hands up. Still, no one is prepared to sing it. Well, you see, like someone said, I sing like a bird, but the bird is an ostrich. Now, last week I gave an introduction to the series, so what I'm going to do is a quick recap, and then Becca's going to come and read those two passages. So here's the recap. The series seeks to address the view, the wrong view, which I think is widely held, that as Christians, the only important things we do are to attend and serve at church on a Sunday and share our faith. Now, those are very important, but the Bible lays claim to all aspects of our life and gives us a mission that goes beyond what we do at church on a Sunday and sharing our faith. On each of the front lines, if you like, of our daily life, how we spend our money, how we travel to work, what we do at work when we get there, what we do in our leisure and recreation, how we deal with our neighbours. On each of those front lines, we're called to live out our faith and put into practice God's love. In all these areas, we are living our lives as disciples of Jesus when we share our faith, and we're called to live our lives as disciples of Jesus before we share our faith. Last week, we looked at the bit in the Sermon on the Mount, which we're going to read again today, on how Christians are called to be salt and light. Now, salt, we use these days to flavor food. In those days, it had a more fundamental purpose. It was the thing that the ancient world used to preserve food. So, no electricity in those days. What you would do with your meat is you'd pack your meat in salt, and by doing that, you would stave off decay. So salt staved off decay, staved off corruption. So Jesus was basically saying, Christians are the bit in society that staves off decay, that staves off corruption. We're called to be salt. That's what salt was used for. And that same bit in the Sermon on the Mount said that Christians were the light of the world, bringing truth and clarity into situations which would otherwise be dark, allowing people to see more clearly. And by being the light of the world, people who aren't Christians would see the good that Christians do in society, which would point them to God. And in all this, as we saw last week, we Christians don't do this stuff in order to gain God's favor or prove ourselves in some way as good citizens or nice people. We do this stuff because we realize we have a glorious future which is certain for those who follow Jesus. We do this stuff because of the love that God has shown us and because of the future that Jesus has made possible for us through his death and resurrection. When we act as salt and light, when we show love to others, we do so as an overflow of the love God has shown to us. The second line of that song, What's Love Got to Do with It, is what's love but a secondhand emotion? Well, love isn't really an emotion at all in biblical terms, but what we do in showing God's love to others is very much secondhand. He loved us, we love others, by being salt and light in the world. Now, I'm not going to go big in this sermon about our motivations in doing this. This is going to be a very practical talk. If you want more, listen to last week's sermon, which is on the website. But to be clear, we're not saying go out and earn brownie points by being good Christians. We're not saying that. We are saying live out your faith in the certainty of your future glory. So, our passages, Colossians 4, verses 5 and 6, Matthew 5, 13 to 16. Becca's going to come and read them now. Please follow them as she reads. Please keep the passages open when she's done.
Thank you, Simon. Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6. Be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 to 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven.
Great, thank you very much, Becca. Now, today we're going to look at how we live out those principles when we do our shopping. By shopping, I mean when we as customers go and spend our money, whether that's the weekly shop at Whitechapel Sainsbury's, getting a coffee in a coffee shop or a meal in a cafe or restaurant, getting someone in to mend your roof, getting your keys cut, basically anything where we as punters spend our money. Now, the title of this series, as you can see, is What's Love Got to Do With It? And you may very well think, what indeed? For Pete's sake, Simon, can't you just leave me alone to go and buy a pint of milk at Londis, is what you may be thinking. So let me ask you the same question that Jesus asked. In fact, Jesus' first reported words in the Gospel of John. I'll be very impressed if anyone knows what they are. Jesus' first words in the Gospel of John are this: what do you want? Those are his first words in the Gospel of John. What do you want? What do you want when you go to the shops? Now, you may think that's a simple question to answer. Who here went to buy some clothes in one of the summer sales this year? Okay, I did a few. What items were you hoping to buy, whether or not you did buy them? One of you guys that put up your hand. I'm going to pick on Sean. Sean, what were you hoping to buy? A T-shirt. Okay. So, let's ask Jesus his question. What do you want? I think as a Christian, you can answer that three ways. What do I want? I want to buy a T-shirt. It's a really simple way to answer the question. Second way of answering the question, what do you want? Well, if you enjoy shopping, you can say, well, I want some retail therapy. I want to get out there. I want to see what the shops is doing. I kind of enjoy it. It's my thing. What do you want? Perfectly legitimate answers. Thirdly, what do you want? I want to live out my faith, to be salt and light, to show God's love when I go to the shops. That's the bit I'm talking about today. The bit about being salt and light, showing God's love. How can we be salt and light when we go to the shops? Well, I thought I'd Google some stuff. So I Googled how things are for shop workers at the moment. And I came across this. Oh, not that. There we are. Came across that. I found this website called the Retail Bulletin. I think it's a sort of trade website for retail outlets, and an article from April this year with the title Understanding the Challenges of Mental Health in Retail. And what the article did is it ran through the pressures that those working in retail are under. So here's an extract. I'm going to read an extract from this website. This is what it said. In addition to poor physical retail environments, these external factors also play a part in retail workers' mental health. Then it listed some, so here are some of them. Firstly, financial strain due to cost of living crisis. Many retail employees may be concerned about their financial security due to the persistent cost of living crisis. Retail workers may have to work extra hours or get a second job just to pay the bills, resulting in exhaustion, lack of engagement, and ultimately mental health issues. Secondly, the emotional impact of shoplifting and theft. Most of us have seen the news reports, right, in terms of shoplifting being on the rise. This is what the article said. In addition to causing actual financial damage to the store in question, both shoplifting and theft cause an immense emotional toll on the workers. In addition to being angry and frustrated by the issue itself, workers feel shame and helplessness. And finally, customer aggression and hostility. Retail workers are often subjected to verbal abuse and threats by angry and abusive customers. Such encounters can be profoundly distressing. Continued exposure to confrontational situations can also have an impact on retail workers' self-esteem and confidence. Not a happy picture. That's what the article said. And you add to that the fact that businesses are failing all the time. How do you imagine employees of the body shop are feeling at the moment? They've closed their flagship store on Oxford Street. Other shops are open, but who knows how long for? How do you imagine employees of Ted Baker are feeling at the moment? The company's in administration, so insolvency effectively, and the administrator said at the end of July that all the UK shops were going to close. How are they going to put food on their table? How are they going to get a job somewhere else if all the other shops are in a bad way as well? And here's the thing, how do you think those working in the card shops in the city, in Clinton's, in Scribbler, are feeling? After the pandemic, people don't really come into the city on Monday and Friday anymore. Straight away, two-fifths of their sales week has disappeared. Because it's all passing trade, you know, you don't plan to go to a card shop. You see a card shop, you know that someone's got a birthday, you go in. How are they feeling? That's the environment we're in. That's the retail environment we're in. When we go into a shop, into a retail business of any sort, things are tough for those that are working there. So I want to suggest three ways that we as Christians can live out the gospel here, can be salt and light and show God's love. Then I'm going to invite up someone who does this far better than I do to share how they do it. Anyway, here's the first way we can live out the gospel. So, Colossians 4, verse 6, if you have that open, look at it with me. Colossians 4, verse 6 says, "Let your conversation be always full of grace." Flipping over to Matthew 5, verse 16, "Let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." So, let your conversation be always full of grace. Grace, blessing others at a cost to yourself. Let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds. Good deeds, things that stand out from the crowd, things that show that you dance to a different tune. It may seem an obvious point from what I've just read out from that article about how retail workers are under pressure, but here's the first way. Be a good customer. Most of our interactions with shopkeepers, with retail assistants, with other shoppers for that matter, are not going to be deep and meaningful about Jesus' death and resurrection. They're going to be short, simple exchanges. The fruit of the Spirit, we read in the Bible, is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. How much of those things are on display when we go to the shops? Now, I'm not saying, I don't think the Bible is saying either, that when we buy something that turns out to be poor quality and it falls apart the moment we get home, that we shouldn't bring it back and ask for a refund or an exchange. If you get someone in to mend your guttering and they do an obviously poor job, it's perfectly legit to ask them to come back and fix it, to do what they were meant to do first time, but properly. But how we conduct ourselves will either be full of grace or it won't. It'll involve others seeing our good deeds or it won't. Sometimes I imagine that will involve taking a breath, mending our tone, and not insisting on every right we may have in that situation. It's a matter of wisdom and living out our faith in the world. Now, I'm speaking to myself as much as anyone else here, as Jay will testify. If a waiter in a cafe is having a bad day or is new to the job and learning the ropes and hasn't quite worked out how things go, then I can be one of any number of customers that day that complain. Or I can be maybe the only customer that day that shows compassion and empathy. It's such an obvious point, I'm almost embarrassed to make it, but I think it needs saying. My social media feed includes lots of clips of people behaving really badly, customers behaving really badly in retail settings. So here's my test for myself. Hopefully this will help you. Here's my test for myself. If this man or woman I'm dealing with happens to come to church next Sunday and they see me there, will they be surprised? Is my behavior consistent with the Christian gospel when I'm in their shop? What does my behavior as a Christian say about love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control? We need to be a good customer. Here's the second way we can live out the gospel when we go to the shops. Colossians 4, verse 5. Have a look at that. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. And verse 6. Let your conversation always be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Be wise. Take advantage of opportunities. Let your conversation be seasoned with salt. Know how to answer everyone. Now, when Paul says, take advantage of every opportunity, in a shop setting, I don't think that means look for the special offers. Here, I think Paul is talking about every opportunity to live out and speak the gospel, to bless others. It can be really simple. We can take an interest in those dealing with us. And as Christians, we have each other as resources to bring into play. How does that work? Two examples. A year or two ago, I took my car in for a service at a garage just round the corner from here. On the right, as you turn into Three Colts Lane from Cambridge Heathrow, just before you go under the railway bridge. The moment I walked in, the business owner asked me to sign a petition, which they were going to show to their landlord. Their landlord was going to triple their rent, and they wanted their customers to sign a petition to object. They serviced my car, and I made an appointment for the car to be MOT'd, and I saw that their appointment calendar was almost empty. They were facing having to close the business because of this threefold rent increase and having no customers. Now, there was nothing wrong with their work. The reason they didn't have customers wasn't because they were on the take or they were doing a bad job. They were good at their job. They were honest with their charging. They were diligent. I asked if I could pray for their business and get others at this strange place down the road called the Good Shepherd Mission to do so as well. The owner was absurdly grateful. So I sent notes around the men's breakfast and the Hackney Patch WhatsApp groups asking people to pray. Last I heard, the business is still open, but has moved to new premises further away. How can we be a blessing to those we come across when doing our shopping? Well, the other obvious way is to use your power. Now, if you hear that in a sermon, you imagine resurrection power, power of the Holy Spirit. None of that. Use your power as a customer. Here's an idea. Pick a local business and go to it again and again and again. Become a regular. Bless them with your custom. Find someone under pressure that you want to succeed and buy things from them. There's a great example of this in New Zealand during COVID. Here's an article in a New Zealand newspaper written just as the first COVID restrictions were easing about how a church in Wellington did this. This is what the article said. In our current nationwide state of alert level 2, many local businesses are struggling with their ability to retain customers and keep their doors open. In the midst of this, there has been an opportunity for parishes to support the businesses in their communities. Reverend Ben Johnson Froh shared how over the last few weeks, their church has been going out after the service in small groups to cafes in the area. In returning to physical gatherings and the joy that has been for their church, Ben explained that they were prompted by God to remember that they were blessed to be a blessing. Our going out after church, he said, has been a way of taking what we have been blessed with and blessing others, building relationships with those in our community, and praying for the kingdom of God to come and flourish as we do. One of the spaces their congregation has been visiting is Common Ground in Waitohi Hub, the new Johnsonville Library Complex. Over this time, they've developed a good relationship with Sam, the manager there, who sent Ben this message. Thank you so much for organising to have all your wonderful people pop over for coffee after the service. We are so blessed to be part of such an awesome community. It really shines through in uncertain times like this. Listen to that. It really shines through. Let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. That's what that church in New Zealand did, simply by going for a coffee after church. And there's an interesting phrase Paul uses in that short bit in Colossians that Becca read. Let your conversation be seasoned with salt. And it occurred to me as I was doing this sermon, why do pubs and bars sell salty snacks? Why do they sell salty snacks? Because they want you to be thirsty. How we deal with people can make them thirsty, not for anything you might find in a pub or a bar, but for something more profound, something that quenches a spiritual thirst. If we have the opportunity to explain our faith, to speak God's truth into situations, let's take it. So, be a good customer. Use your resources to bless others. Finally, how can we live out the gospel going to the shops? Well, can I suggest by supporting shops that are being salt and light and not supporting shops that are not being salt and light? Two examples of shops doing this well. Entertainer toy shops. My kids are way too old for these toy shops. Anyone else been in one recently? No. Okay. They have a shop just outside the food court on the lower ground level of Westfield Stratford. They have a chairman and a founder called Gary Grant, who did something very unusual in the retail sector. He decided all his employees should be able to enjoy a family day every weekend. Other shops give their employees a day off some other time during the week. But Gary Grant figured, well, kids are at school Monday to Friday, so if Fred or Frida in my staff is off on Thursday, they're not seeing their kids. So he gave up about 15% of the business's profit potential by closing all his stores on a Sunday. There is a business putting the welfare of its staff above making a profit. If we want to be salt of the earth in encouraging things that stave off decay and corruption, there is a business to support. Another example. I don't know how many of you heard, did you hear this? A man called James Timpson was appointed to be prisons minister by Keir Starmer in July and appointed to the Lords. People hear that? Very good. Now, if you hear the name Timpson, you immediately think of those shops mending shoes and cutting keys. And you think, what's that got to do with prisons policy? Well, this is what the Timpsons website says. This is a quote from their website. At Timpson, we know how lucky we are to have a successful business. However, we believe that with success comes a great deal of responsibility. The Timpson Foundation specializes in the recruitment of marginalized groups within society, as well as supporting numerous other socially minded projects. In 2002, our former CEO, James Timpson, visited a local prison where he met a young man named Matt. James immediately liked Matt and thought he would make an excellent addition to our business. When he was released from prison, James offered him a job, and we're pleased to say that Matt has gone on to become one of our most successful branch managers. James realized there must be more great people in our prisons, and from that moment on, we decided to proactively recruit ex-offenders. We are very proud to say that Timpson is now one of the largest employers of ex-offenders in the UK. Approximately 10% of our workforce is made up of people who have criminal convictions. We believe in giving people a second chance. We don't judge people on what they've done in the past. We like to focus on what they can do in the future. If we want to be salt of the earth in encouraging things that stave off decay and corruption, there is a business to support. And let me be controversial by suggesting one example of the opposite. Until last week, the app I've had on my phone for deliveries has been Deliveroo. Here's an article from last week's Observer. This is what the article said. Food delivery companies such as Deliveroo and Uber Eats do not formally employ their riders. Instead, they are gig economy workers paid for each individual delivery. That means workers can end up earning far less than the minimum wage and are sometimes forced to live in squalid conditions. And the article explained how Deliveroo has recently fought off a 7-year legal campaign to secure more rights for its workers. Is that the sort of business I should support if I'm the salt of the earth? I don't think so. I've not had the best service in the part in the past from Just Eat, but it's the only one of the major food delivery companies that pays its workers the minimum wage. So, poor service or not, I've deleted Deliveroo from my phone and I've resubscribed to Just Eat. Or maybe I'll just avoid the takeaways and be healthier. What's love got to do with going to the shops? Well, we can show God's love to those we meet by being a good customer. We can bless shops and those working in them with our business, and we can support shops that are doing the salt and light thing and take our business away from those that are doing the opposite. Now, that's all I've got to say, but I wanted some time to hear from someone else as to how they live out the gospel, who does all this far better than I do. So if I could invite Suzanne up. Now, when I was discussing this with Suzanne, we were sort of talking about what questions should I ask, and she said, and I think I quote, "You can ask me whatever question you like, but I'm like a politician, I'll give the answer I want to give." So, Suzanne, how do you choose where to shop? How have you been able to bless others doing your shopping?
I forgot, Simon, you were going to ask me questions. I was just going to say what I wanted anyway. How do I choose where to shop? I think it's fantastic talk. Thank you, Simon, and lots for us to think about. I think it's to do with intentionality, and it's about being intentional in being relational wherever we go, whatever we're doing locally. And people who I think did it kind of far better than I were John and Dorothy Davis. And John Davis, some of you will know, it was his funeral recently, and some local people from local businesses were at that funeral, and I know that those are not believers. So it's about being I choose to be relational wherever I go. I can give you a couple of examples. I've got a tiny Italian cafe that I go to because nobody can see me there. And the young man who was serving, turned out that he was actually a graphic designer. And he was hating serving. Not hating, but he was like, "I need to move on. He was Italian. I need help." And actually, I was able to involve Gary from here in his situation, which he was able to really give information about how you could be a graphic designer in this country, for example. That's one example. Another, just my local grocers in Bethnal Green Road, which I really love. It's all about relationship. When Ryan came back from being away on his, how many years sabbatical was it? Several. To be able to introduce Ryan to the Afghan people who run it, and really to get them really involved in the food bank here. They now provide the food, the fresh fruit and groceries for the food bank here. And I think it's hard, like, to be salt and light. We've got so much opportunity by just showing people what goes on here. We can highlight what goes on here because we have so many things to draw people's attention to, for example, the night shelter, for example, the recovery groups, working with so many different kinds of people. So, for example, my butcher, who I have had, Joe's laughing. I'm only allowed 5 minutes, but this I have to give a little aside at this stage. My butcher, who will actually prepare anything I want for us here, and we have had discount here for years because of the kind of respect that we are held in here and what we do. Whose wedding was it, Joe? What happened? Okay. We got the quantities of coriander wrong. Yes. Jen's wedding. Okay, sorry, Jen. We got the quantities of coriander wrong in the recipe. And we gave him all the spices to make up the burgers with, and the burgers actually turned out to be green. That was squarely on our shoulders and not anybody else's. I think, you know, people who come to mind are like the same woman who I have seen in Sainsbury's for as long as that Sainsbury's has been open. And you see her and she's harassed. And I just think, let's be smiling at that woman. Let's be grateful to that woman every time we're in, because we can be a blessing. We are a blessing. And actually, this is for Jenny. I think we can even bless our Amazon delivery person. We can speak words of encouragement. If that is our intention, to be relational in Jesus' name, then the rest will come afterwards, I think. And we have had opportunity to pray for our shopkeepers, not often, but they definitely come. I've been able to pray a blessing for the man who mends the shoes. They will come if that is our mindset, and I'm not saying that is always my mindset, but it's been a challenge even to me to think about it some more and to be prayerful for those relationships that we have invested in over years and years. Great. Thank you very much.